Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Hi, all you movie fans out there. Thanks so much for tuning in to Movie Addict Headquarters. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you during this third week of May 2011 and feeling very excited about our show today. Our topic is Native Americans on Film, and we're very excited about it. And we hope to be talking with filmmaker Sunrise Tipicani and actress-director Valerie Redhorse to find out what Native American filmmakers are doing to improve the portrayal of Native Americans in movies. And they are here right now. I'm going to bring them on. We'll start the discussion later, but I just want everyone to know that they are here. So I'm going to start, ladies first. Welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters, Valerie.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. And as I mentioned to you, I'm in rural Minnesota at the moment on a reservation, and I hope everyone can hear me okay, and I'm just delighted to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we are really happy to have you, and we can hear you just fine. And we also have Sunrise with us, so Sunrise, welcome to you also to Movie Addict Headquarters.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here. I'm in a hectic mode of working on the movie, but taking some good time out to talk to you guys. I'm excited to hear what Valerie also has to say, so I'm excited.
Well, we've been after you for a long time, haven't we, Sunrise? And so we finally have you, and I'm so happy that you were able to get away from the set and be with us. And we also have with us our co-producer, Misha Zubarev, who is the person who referred you to me, Sunrise. And so as soon as we finish talking with Valerie, I'm going to have Misha get on the line and give a little background information about you. But Valerie, I am so in admiration of the work that you're doing to help change the way Native Americans are portrayed in movies. I absolutely loved your movie, Naturally Native. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, I don't know whether you remember or not, but right after that film was released, I had a chance to talk with you and Irene Bedard about the movie. And I just am wanting to encourage all of our listeners to watch that movie. And also the work you're doing with an organization called HAPN. And why don't we start with that? Why don't you tell us, before you talk about Naturally Native, why don't you talk about that particular organization and give us a little update?
I would be delighted. When we launched the film Naturally Native, we also launched our nonprofit arm. Naturally Native was produced by my production company, Red Horse Native Productions, and so Red Horse Native Productions launched a nonprofit arm, which is a 501c3, called Hollywood Access Program for Natives. The short acronym is HAPNIN, and that is a training organization that supports Native Americans of all ages into the film industry, film and entertainment industry, and so on every film production, we bring Native students, again, of all ages, who want to learn a discipline in film, predominantly behind the camera. We do have programs for in front of the camera that are a little bit different, but we have apprenticeships and internships so that alongside all of our professionals, they'll be in different departments, in the costuming department, in the directing area, in script supervision, whatever the interest area lies, then there'll be a Native person working alongside a professional from the industry. And we found that it was really important because Hollywood is an industry of internships and mentorships and learning on the job. You can't always go to school to learn some of these disciplines. You can go to film school, but that doesn't always teach you on-the-job experience. And it is a very closed industry, and we see a lot of nepotism, but also there's a lot of positive role modeling, and we just needed to get our Native people involved with that. So what better to do it than from amongst the Native production company? And so we definitely want to get the word out that anyone who's interested can reach out to me on my website at ValerieRedhorse.com, and we keep on file those people that are interested. And every time we are in production, we will sponsor several Native Americans into the program. And most of them have then gone on to work in Hollywood as a regular professional in that discipline, and it's a great launching pad.
What a wonderful organization! I'm just so glad that you've done that. And I need to interrupt for just a second because we usually have people who sign up for the chat while the live show is going on, but we're having some technical difficulties. And our co-host Jazz Shaw also said that he had trouble getting into the chat room. Jazz, is that still a problem for people?
I'm assuming it's still a problem for people. It's still a problem for me, that's for sure.
Oh, wow. Well, we're sorry. We're very, very sorry about that. But please, people, stick around and listen, because I think you're going to be fascinated with the discussion. And we do apologize for the technical difficulties. We usually don't have that happening. But Valerie, back to you. I know that you can't stay for the entire show, so I want to make sure that our listeners know about your movie, Naturally Native. Tell a little bit about that movie.
Absolutely.
And why
I
you
would
made
be delighted
the film.
To.
Good.
Well, we made it. We're coming up on the 11-year anniversary. So it was one of our first feature films, and I wrote the film and wanted to have it made in Hollywood. I thought someone was going to come along and buy it from one of the big studios, and in the end realized that it was better to make it sort of from within the community. So the Manchatec Pequot tribe financed the entire film, and we produced it and had behind the camera and in front of the camera Native American involvement. So it was great in that respect. And we tried to really honor a Native story, a contemporary Native story. As you mentioned, Irene Bedard starred in it, as well as Kimberly Norris Guerrero and Floyd Westerman, bless his soul and his memory. He's since passed on. And we just had a great Native cast. And so it was basically financed by and produced by, directed by, written by, distributed by all Native talent from a business standpoint as well as a creative standpoint, which I think was probably a first in Hollywood. And the great thing for me is it obviously told a personal story. It was my life story of finding my heritage and just everything that it entailed. And I'm involved in working in tribal gaming in my other life as an investment banker, and it told a little bit about kind of understanding Indian gaming and our community and identity and roll numbers and all of that stuff, and our identity as women and Indian women. And what I really love about it is it served as sort of an educational tool. So even beyond its screen presence in theaters, and we just recently had a Turner Classic premiere on television, but outside of Hollywood,
great.
As it were. Yeah, that was great. But outside of Hollywood, we have screened on an ice glacier in Norway for the Sami people. We've shown at every major university. It's really a tour around the world and been an educational media experience for people to just learn about who we are as Native people in a contemporary setting. And that's been a real blessing. And it's also led to several other projects. We've done 4 or 5 films since then. We're working on some really exciting projects now. And so it will be one of my favorite memories as a filmmaker. It was my directorial debut. And, you know, I've done several things since then. And so I thank God every day for that opportunity. And I thank the Pequots for that opportunity. And just it's a great memory for me.
Well, and a great memory for the people that get to watch it, too. And do you know whether it's available on Netflix? Because Jazz is a big Netflix fan, so I know he's wanting to know if it's available on Netflix.
You know, everyone has told me that we should have pursued that, and we didn't. That is my fault. It is available at naturallynative.com online,
okay.
And it's available at several Indian. I tried to stay sort of indigenous, you know, so a lot of Indian distributors carry it, as well as casino gift stores. We've never gone sort of beyond that, which we should have, and I should probably still fill out that form and get it at Netflix. But in the immediacy, if someone wants to order it, it's at naturallynative.com.
Naturallynative.com. So listeners, be sure to check it out there. Well, I am just so happy that you were able to that we were able to catch you today in your travels, and we hope that we can get you back spend a whole show with you. Would you be willing to do that, Valerie?
I would love that. I'd love that. I'd love to talk about some of the projects we're working on now and just spend a little more time. But I am on the White Earth Reservation in northern Minnesota and working on a project up here, and the reception's not great. So I'm thankful that you had me on as a guest and that I could spend a little time. But let's do it longer next time, and I'd love to answer any questions. And like I said before, if any of your listeners have questions that they weren't able to ask because of the chat room, or the time element, they can reach me at ValerieRedHorse.com, and I'm very accessible that way.
Great, ValerieRedHorse.com. So I'm sure you'll be hearing from some of our listeners, and we'll be back in touch with you. Thanks so much. And
thank you.
And we'll let you go now. So best of luck with all your exciting projects.
Oh, I appreciate that. And have a great show. Your other guests are fabulous, and say hello to everyone for me, and thank you very, very much. Have a great day.
You too, Val. Bye now. That was a stroke of luck, being able to catch Valerie today, and now we want to hear from Sunrise, but I'm going to call on Misha, because he is the one who found Sunrise for us. So, Misha, how did you get in touch with Sunrise, and could you tell us a little bit of his background information that impressed you before we bring him on?
Hi, Beijo. So, first, I just want to say it's so great to be back on your show again, and Jazz, I know you're listening. Your other two, hello to you as well. And
hey, how you doing?
Hey, how are you? So I know actually Sunrise and I, how we met. We met at college at Temple University. We were classmates, and we had a class in cinematography. And he helped me on one of the films as a cinematographer. And and we just became over the course of time, we became friends. And right now he's living and he's working in Oklahoma, and it turned out, and I live in New York City, and it turned out that he had a film premiere at the Native American Film Festival last month. So he came for the premiere, and he invited me, and I came to see his film, and we reconnected after I'd say it was maybe a few years since we've last seen each other. So it was very nice to see him, and I told him that I write for Real Talk Reviews, and we have this great radio show, and I was really impressed, you know, with the Native American film and cinema. And as a matter of fact, right now I'm also working on a Native American project, and which Sunrise was consulting me on, and I just thought it would be great to have him come and speak, because he has just a tremendous amount of knowledge about Native American cinema and about cinema in general. And as you know, he is also a professor at Oklahoma University. He teaches, I believe, a class on screenwriting, which I'm sure he'll tell you about shortly. And he's, as I said before, he's a cinematographer, and he just knows every aspect of film. And he's just somebody great to talk to and to listen to, because he's got a lot of things to say. And with that, I would like to welcome Sunrise.
Sunrise, was Misha correct about everything he said about you?
I don't know if that's actually. I mean, like, I do teach some screenwriting. I do know some about Native cinema, cinema in general. It's always a growing passion of mine, and I am actually really honored to be on the same show as Valerie Redhorse, because she's always been sort of inspiration, not just for me, for several other of my Native American filmmaking friends. And I remember hearing a lot about her movies and seeing it when it came out, it was really astounding because it was one of the first times that we'd seen a lot of natives depicted in modern times, and that's sort of one thing that is not as prevalent as it should be. And I think she took the step, one of the first steps in the right direction for a lot of native youth today. And
I'm just impressed with the diversity of your filmmaking experience. Gaffer, electrician, cinematographer, editor, director, consultant, and producer, and all the various movies that you have credits in, American Indian Graffiti, This Thing Life, The Killer Inside Me, Splinter, Immaculate Reception, Yellow, and Loneliness. And I mean, and I think you're working on a movie now called Cowgirls and Angels. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'm on the set of Cowgirls and Angels right now. It's starring James Cromwell and Frankie Faison, and it's going to be a big movie probably in next summer or something like that.
And it's a family movie.
It's a family movie, yes. It's a rodeo movie. It's a young girl. She learns how to trick ride for the rodeo, and it's all in Oklahoma, and it's about Oklahoma. So that's something that's also really interesting to me is sort of like regionalism in cinema. I'm really interested in how Oklahoma is depicted specifically, but because Oklahoma has 33 tribes, federally recognized tribes, there's a lot of Native work that also comes out of Oklahoma, both like artwork but also film work. And this is sort of one of the hubs here. This and New Mexico, I think there's a lot of Native work that's coming out. And it's really amazing to see. Sterling Harjo is making a lot of work out here, and Black Horse Low will come out here every now and then. I've been lucky. I've been fortunate to be able to work in different areas of filmmaking process. Right now I'm gaffing this particular feature. And I've been able to work as a producer or as a writer or as an electrician or as a gaffer and a director of photography, and I see it from different angles. And I'm really excited to hear what Valerie's talking about, sort of like mentoring young natives into the process of making, because that's a really important part of the process that we sort of forget. There are a lot of writers and directors, but there's also a lot of people that help make the movie function, the people who light the movie, the people who dress the movie for the art, and people who set up the food, and people who record the sound. And sometimes I think we forget these things, but they're all important. And the more
Native, it's a collaborative, definitely a collaborative art. Well, Sunrise, I hate to admit this, but I'm from the generation that when I first started going to movies, my cousins and I were really movie addicts from the get-go, and so we spent the weekends at the movies. There were two movie houses right across from each other, and we'd go to one on Saturday with a double feature, and then Sunday with a double feature, and it was usually the Westerns. We were exposed to the Native Americans being the bad guys.
Yeah.
We were exposed to the war path, the war paint, all of that kind of thing. And it's just ridiculous the way Native Americans were portrayed in our movies. And clear up till, what, would it be Dances with Wolves? I don't know. Was that the first movie where the... where the whites became the bad guys and the Indians were the good guys. Now, what are you and your other Native filmmakers doing to change the way Native Americans are portrayed in Hollywood movies?
Well, a lot of them will attack that sort of image. There's a sort of a stereotype. There's several stereotypes that come from, the 1950 Westerns and 1960 Westerns, and it's like the stoic Indian that is quiet and has broken English and has no education and is sort of a drunk and stumbling around and foolish and has no wise words to say. Or it's the opposite. It's like somebody who's very enlightened, very spiritually inclined, very connected with nature, and these things do exist. I mean, they all come from a reality, but there are other types of people that exist that are Native Americans, and just having those two do not depict the full society. What's happening now are people who are telling stories from a younger point of view, people who are telling stories about maybe natives who are spiritually inclined but not mature, and they don't quite know how to pray maybe, or they don't know quite the culture, and they're struggling to identify that within themselves and their family, and sometimes they don't know how to connect to nature. Sometimes they are drunk. So there's a lot of sort of finding out what's real and what's not through creating more three-dimensional characters that have, maybe they're spiritually enlightened, but also they have a lot of flaws, or they are drunk, but also they're really smart and go to school. So there's lots of balancing that's coming out, and a lot of modern tales that have to do with people who are today and not in the 1880s in the West. And that's, Valerie took that step, and Sterling Harjo is doing that right now. Black Horse is doing that right now. And so there are a lot of people that are trying to help make people aware that we're still alive, and we do have a culture that we're clinging on to, but it's not everything that we are. We're still Americans or Canadians, and so we live in a contemporary culture where we watch TV and we listen to pop music, and that's part of our life as well, and that's something that is also sort of trying to be depicted, and there is, sometimes there's a spiritual outlook on that, sometimes they're not, and so there's lots of these kind of characters that are struggling with these things. My current shorts that I direct right now are all attempting to assess how popular culture enters our cultural life, whether we take things that are of popular culture and put them into our spiritual life, how it affects us, whether or not we rely on technology or versus nature, whether or not we actually believe in the traditions that we're taught, whether or not it makes any sense to us. During the 70s, there was sort of a movement in cinema where we started to, American cinema started to see the native as being the savior of the West, and sort of like being more enlightened and showing us that we need to start thinking about the earth and start thinking about our future, which is true. That comes from a lot of traditional teachings. But today, there are some tribes and some tribal people that believe that maybe we're not teaching those things clearly enough, and maybe those values aren't being passed. And so there are younger people that are maybe confused about whether or not those things are accurate or true, or we should follow those things. That's not to say that there aren't people, there are young people who are very smart, very intelligent about passing on our culture and our traditions, but it's a mixed bag. So we are not only educating, I guess, America and sort of like trying to place a more contemporary and accurate depiction of ourselves on the screen, but we're also trying to teach ourselves to ask the appropriate questions about, are we doing this the right way? Is this really what's happening? Are trying to enlighten ourselves as well as everyone else.
Betty,
well,
Joe,
I got to jump in there
because I've been quiet for most of the show.
Yes, I was just going to ask, Jazz. Go ahead.
Something that Betty Joe doesn't know, because we've never discussed this before, Sunrise, is that I've actually done some work in this area. I write in politics for a living in addition to doing movies. I've done a series of interviews with Russell Means, and I'm just curious, between media, both big screen and small screen, and this change in the message, how much do you see of an impact from the people who were more revolutionaries, like Russell Means, the conflicts that have gone on in the past, sometimes violent, sometimes very political in nature, trying to lobby Congress, but do you see that being represented in a way that Russell has tried to do things, and I know he's a very controversial figure even inside the community, but do you see that being represented, being demonized, being heroic to the next generation as they see these changes in media portrayal?
In media portrayal, I think what I've heard some people talk about is how contemporary Native cinema is trying to address those issues in a more, communicative way. In the 70s, when those like American Indian movement started to form and was very vocal by taking over, the Bureau of Indian Affairs or taking over certain buildings, federal buildings, that was an action that created a statement. But today, what has been described as the activism that happens is written into screenplays, or it's written into television, and it's written to poetry and novels. And so the artwork is sort of like creating this response and this way of talking about these things that hasn't been available recently. or before that, it sort of reminds me a little bit of the Iranian Revolution to some extent. I mean, there's not as suppressive before the artwork comes out, but there's a lot of talk that comes through the artwork. And it's like in painting now, and it's in books, like I said, not just cinema. So that I think the younger people are very aware, and the internet helps them be very aware of history and who these people are and their point of view and what it is that they're trying to do. But I think we're not necessarily less active, but we're not as violent about discussing these things. But they're still a common discussion.
Sure, not the physical violence, but I was just curious because I have found him such an engaging character, and I've spoken to him a number of times. There is no denying that on a certain level, Russell is still fighting a war. He's fighting a war that a lot of people stopped fighting a long time ago. And he's got a truckload of young bucks out there a few years ago going counting coup on a Black Hawk helicopter. And I'm not seeing that in movies. But I'm just curious, do you think that there is still a widespread element of that among people in the society, and is that something that should be more represented in films and TV?
Yeah, this is a good – it's an interesting question. When I say it's in film, I would say it's more in documentary. Like Benny Klein is a Navajo filmmaker. He just did something about Columbus Day in Denver, where Columbus Day was originated. And there was a lot of dissenting voice on different sides, like the Italian-Americans as well as the Native Americans, about whether or not Columbus should be celebrated. And so there was heavy activism when that was documented. I think that was 2007. So he's got an amazing documentary, and there's a lot of documentaries about that kind of work.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to fictional narratives, there isn't so much. There's a lot more focus on sort of family themes and coming-of-age films, which is appropriate. I think that's where we sort of are, like, culturally. We're sort of, like, reviving and growing again. I think there's more of that maybe from, like, the 70s, 80s. There's really... cool movie with Irene Bedard, and she is fighting at Wounded Knee. But that sort of picture isn't around right now, and that would be really amazing to see. I think right now we have so many young filmmakers, and they're just trying to identify their voice. So a lot of the films are very personal, very small, and not so didactic about politics yet. But I think that's probably going to come in the next 10 years once they mature and they find their voice. And I'd be excited to see that because I think the politics is changing, not just in terms of how tribes react to the government and reparations, but also to each other, how tribes are maybe having internal strife. I know our own tribe, but I'm enrolled in the Comanche tribe, and we have a lot of questions about whether or not the leadership is appropriate or whether or not the way that we spend money that's coming from our income is spent appropriately and whether or not our social services are being dealt with appropriately. And so there's lots of questions internally, but also other tribes. There are tribes that sort of are trying to figure out whether or not they want to live next to each other, like the Hopi and the Navajo have a classic example about who owns the land, who should be dictating where the land is. And today, I think the Cheyenne Arapaho, they're trying to figure out if they want to be one tribe or two. And there's lots of these things, and I think these are probably going to be the narratives that occur once filmmakers start making fictional narratives about them.
I can hardly wait to see some of these. And because this is Movie Addict Headquarters, we do like to kind of take a look at the films that have already been made. And I'm very curious to find out from you, Sunrise, in your opinion, what's the best and, on the other extreme, the worst mainstream film about Native Americans? I've been doing a lot of thinking about that, and I wonder if my picks jive with yours. So do you have a best and worst?
The best mainstream film. So like the question, I always am trying to figure out what mainstream means, but the mainstream I usually associate with coming out in the theater or being seen by a wide audience across America.
Yes.
And the best mainstream movie that is my favorite that has come out and was distributed by Sony Pictures was actually an Inuit film directed by Zacharias Kinnick called The Fast Runner.
The Fast Runner? I haven't even heard of that.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
I didn't get to see it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's really incredible. It was one of the first Native pictures to be shot on HD, and it was an Inuit community with very very few in the community. It's like the whole community, you know, helped make this film, and it came out of sort of a communal project. And it tells an older tale, and it's very traditional in its teachings. It's a really incredible film, and I think he is actually a world master, not just in Native cinema, but all over cinema history. I think he's leading us into a new language and making us think about nature and the medium in a new way. When it comes to a film that I think depicts us in a less desirable mode, there are too many examples, probably.
That's right.
How long is the show?
That's right. Well, pick one. The worst,
yeah.
One out of all of the many.
I mean, what's great is that there are Native actors that are working.
Yes.
And I appreciate whenever I see them, and even if I have qualms about the narrative or about the depiction, I am always happy to see Native actors acting. And it's hard for me to really pin down a movie today. There are steps that are being taken toward a better light. Like, I just saw the Casino Jack movie with Kevin Spacey in it, and it's about Jack Abramoff, and he, in real life, based on reality, and he dealt with a lot of tribal people. There's some great Native actors in that, and they're depicted as really strong characters, and I thought that was a really great opportunity for depiction.
Well, we didn't have to
Brave
worry about
Green
that
was
we
in
were,
it,
when I was growing
favorite.
Up, Betty Joe, did we? Because usually they would try to get somebody who was Italian to play a Native American.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
Brave
I know that.
Green. Yeah,
I know it's not funny, but it's
actor.
True.
Graham
yeah,
Greene. He's in. Of course, he won an Best Supporting Oscar nomination for his work in Dances with Wolves, and so many of the films that I have enjoyed, Graham Greene has been in it. What a name, though. Graham Greene,
is that Graham Greene.
The British author? No, Graham Greene.
Exactly, yeah.
But he's just wonderful. He's been in so many. Well, I really think it would have, if we were picking a worst one, it would have to be one of John Ford's films. But,
yeah.
You know, he was a great director. But I'm telling you, I remember the first film that scared me. The Searchers was one. But oh my gosh, what is that one that just scared me? Drums Along the Mohawk. That was back in the
1990s. Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that is frightening. And even The Searchers, I get frightened when I see that. And I remember when I was young, I was frightened. And I didn't connect with the Indians. I sort of didn't understand it was Indians attacking a home. And later when I came into college, I started to realize that actual tribe that's attacking people and it's really malicious and really vengeful is my own tribe. And I get really...
Wow.
That one was on my list.
There were so many Indians who died in battle in these movies by John Ford. So
yeah.
Those are two that would be on my list. But I loved Smoke Signals. If maybe you don't call that a mainstream film about Native
Americans. No, that's definitely a mainstream movie. And I remember when that came out, everyone was so excited, and there were like cheering and laughing, and it was such a great audience with all the natives when that came out. It was really incredible and really powerful and really empowering.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And nobody, I hope all of our listeners who haven't seen Smoke Signals will try to see it. That first scene where the DJ says, it's a good day to be indigenous. I mean, and I was just drawn in. And then the humor in the film and the whole dialogue between the two main actors. I mean, and of course, was it directed by a Native American?
Yes, it was by Chris Ayer.
Chris Ayer.
Yeah.
And it was based on Sherman Alexie's Oh, gosh, he wrote a book or a story called, and I wish they would have used this, The Lone Ranger and Tonto.
Yes, and Tonto.
Fist fight in heaven.
Yes.
What a title.
Yes, that's a good novel. A lot of good short stories. He's really an incredible writer, Sherman Alexie.
Yes. Yeah, so there are some good ones. I did, of course, love Naturally Native. I know it didn't get a big distribution. And there's a movie called Christmas in the Clouds. Again, there's Graham Greene, who plays a vegetarian chef. It's just one of the most delightful screwball comedies that I have ever seen. And it takes place on a ski lodge owned by a Native American tribe. And it has so many interesting characters and a great romance, so I'm definitely recommending that as one. But you're talking about the actors who have Native American ancestry, and my goodness, there's so many of them. Some of them I didn't even realize. Of course, Gary Farmer stands out.
Farmer.
He's made wonderful performances, and I did not know that Cher was Native American ancestry, or that Angie Harmon also.
Oh, wow! I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so there. I mean, I was just looking, looking through the list at all the all the actors that had. Adam Beach is doing a great job in his moves. He's really getting a lot of play. And Dennis Weaver was, and James Garner, and Benjamin Bratt, and Taylor Lautner, I think, the guy that's...
Taylor Lautner's very popular right now, yes.
Yeah, Wes Studi, and my gosh, Will Sampson. But I'm with you. It's good to see the Native Americans working on the films and acting in the films. Well, Jazz, do you have a best and worst pick in terms of the Native Americans?
Well, yeah, but nobody's going to really care for mine. First of all, I thought Dance with Wolves was a horrible movie. I've said that before, and it had, just really no relevance. I thought it was cinematically terrific. It was, once again, as typical in the genre, a beautiful film with tons of great cinematography. I just thought the message was terrible, and I didn't care for the story. I went for something more obscure, for one of the earliest films that I remember that had something more of a positive message about Native Americans, and get ready for this, because this goes back a real long ways. Key Largo, the original Key Largo.
Oh, yeah.
With Humphrey Bogart.
Oh.
It was a film where that wasn't the main storyline, but one of the underlying themes that was going on was the fact that there were Native Americans who were being unjustly accused of something that in the end they weren't even responsible for three-quarters of what they're... But it was just so easy to blame them and let's go shoot down the red man, because that just solves these problems kind of situation. Well, there's this other story with the real criminals playing out. And I thought that was one of the very early steps to show that, sometimes, you're really treating people really badly and not even giving it a second thought. And that was one of the ones that came to mind for me.
That's an interesting choice. We haven't heard from Misha. I wonder if he has any picks for the best and the worst films about Native Americans. Hi, Misha.
Hey, yes. I really didn't come up with a list of best or worst. I've been reading a lot of novels, though. I like Tony Killerman. He represents... I think he wrote about almost over a dozen novels in the Navajo Reservation. And they actually adapted a few of them into films like Skinwalker and Skinwalker was... There's a Chant Way or some... I can't remember. Windtalker, Skinwalkers. I mean, those are obviously... I'm not sure if... I guess they would be more commercial, and they deal with mysticism, and they deal with things that I guess a lot of sometimes Native Americans could find our interpretation of Native mysticism offensive. for obvious reasons, because we always tend to take things like that out of context. And But Tony Hillman is very well respected in the reservation. I know he was it's never frowned upon when at least referring to his novels, and I know he lived there for a long time. Although the adaptation of the films, I'm not sure how Native Americans would react to the film adaptations themselves, but I think the books were interesting. I like Smoke Signals. I thought it was a really fun piece. I loved what really stood out for me in Smoke Signals was the transitions between the scenes. I thought that was actually very original, especially for the time, how they made different cinematic transitions. I think they were in the bus, and then the camera kind of went to the window, and then it just kind of turned into another scene. It all kind of looked very seamless, and I just like that cinematography aspect of it. And I thought the dialogue, the character dialogue, was also witty at some point.
Absolutely, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I cannot believe that how fast the time has gone by today. I wanted to make sure that Sunrise had a chance to answer this question that we ask all of our guests, and that is, what's the most important thing you want people to know about you, Sunrise?
That's a good question. I would say that if people knew that I am always interested to hear what they have to say about Native cinema and cinema in general, because if I'm a Native filmmaker and I'm making a film and my audience, target audience, maybe 1% of the U.S. population, that doesn't mean I'm not going to make a movie for everybody else. So having this discussion about hearing what's good for you, what you thought was bad, is really interesting to me, because that's going to help create more stories, because our audience is not just Native audiences, it's everybody.
Absolutely. I love that answer, and I see that it is time to wrap things up. So I want to thank you very much, Sunrise, for being with us. You were well worth waiting for, and I also would issue the invitation to come back on our show when we can spend more time with you. Will you do that when you have a little more
time
to spend with us?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. I think this is great.
Good. Well, we'll hold you to that, and we're going to be wrapping things up. So this is Betty Jo Tucker with a big shout out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio and WRSP93.com for their support, and thanks to Jazz and Misha for all their help, as well as to our chatters, at least the people who tried to sign up for the chat. We do apologize for that, and other listeners. And we have a special message to Nikki Starr, our producer extraordinaire. Get well soon. We all miss you. Please come back next time, dear listeners, when Michelle Danner will be here to talk about her extraordinary career as a director, actress, producer, and acting coach for such stars as Gerard Butler, Chris Rock, Penelope Cruz, James Franco, Salma Hayek, and Christian Slater. In the meantime, don't you forget to check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com, and you'll find some of Misha Zubarev's fine articles on that site, too. That's all for now, folks. So here's the talented A.J. Daniels to take us out with a song dedicated to all you listeners.
love you, then you'd be forced to love me too. If you knew how much I adore you, you'd stay with me and be true.